Welcome to Transition, Gadget 360's gaming and pop culture podcast. In today's episode, we're going to be talking about Battlefield 5, which is written Battlefield V. In this game, there are a bunch of things to speak about, which is game modes, the trailer, the price, editions, and loot boxes and microtransactions. Now, I think there are so many interesting things here, which we will reveal slowly on this episode. And to do that, we have our games editor, Rishi Alwani.
Hey.
And friend of the podcast, Mikhail Madnani.
This coffee is too hot.
All right then. I'm your host, Pranay Parab. So first things first, let's just like juggle up the order a little. I would like to speak more about how Battlefield 5 could sort of look to make up some of the disasters that happened last year for EA with the Star Wars Battlefront 2 episode. So now, what we do know so far is that EA is going to, at least they have claimed that they are only going to do something like Overwatch, which is microtransactions happening in terms of like the cosmetic stuff, loot boxes giving you only skins and other items.
Actually, there are no loot boxes.
Huh, okay.
So apparently what they're saying this time around is, yes, it's like Overwatch in the sense that you can only buy cosmetics, but they're also saying that you can see what you're buying.
Yeah.
Now, it does appear to be kind of like, it seems to be their apology game after the colossal mess that was Battlefront 2.
Yeah, so, you know, there's a very important point there. The fact that you can see what you're buying, that sort of comes in because there was a lot of news last year about regulators in the EU and even the US looking at whether loot boxes are gambling. So, well, first things first, loot boxes are not there. Okay, that's one way. Because I think no game studio really wants regulators to be looking into their game, and they don't want to like put in a whole bunch of compliance related things except for the whole like, you know, that ESRB and PEGI rating or whatever that happens.
Yeah, fun fact, ESRB and PEGI actually were the result to ensure that there was less regulation in gaming.
Yeah.
So Mike's favorite game, in fact, Mortal Kombat, was responsible for ESRB being a thing. Because it was so gruesome that the US government decided to look into gaming.
I thought it was Night Trap.
Mainly Mortal Kombat. Okay. And then, Night Trap as well.
Yeah, so the second point here is that if you can see what you're getting inside each loot box, then that's not really
gambling,
is it?
Well, no, there's no loot box. You can see what you're buying in terms of a cosmetic, which is kind of like how Fortnite handles it. Except we don't know whether it kind of makes sense if Battlefield will copy that, where you have rotating items and it gives you that sense of you're going to miss it if you don't buy it now and you don't know when it's coming back. So that kind of stuff makes sense. But the Battlefield social media, they're going all out with like no loot boxes, no premium pass, all players have access to the same maps and modes, keep your squad together no matter the front. This is something they're like repeatedly saying over and over again. And yeah, while that does seem like overcompensation after Battlefront 2, I still like, whatever, I'm interested to see how they handle the actual microtransactions, because all of this is good on paper. It just means that, you know, we can buy either the digital deluxe edition, which gives you the game 4 days early or 3 days early, whatever, or buy the standard edition and you're sorted. You can just play with your friends whenever. You don't have to worry about, oh, he bought premium, I have to wait for the premium map to come into rotation, or they have to share premium with me and stuff like that. That's gone out now. And they also said that they're going to regularly add new content in the form of maps and modes and stuff like that. So it's going to be interesting to see how this plays out. And also, it's Battlefield V, and they've said that instead of calling it 5, they're going with V because V is like the peace sign or V for victory. This is something
so,
as they've said.
Long story short, in fact, this was when the name of the game was rumored to be Battlefield 5. I think GamesBeat had said that the reason they went with the Roman numeral V is because, Winston Churchill using the peace sign for victory. But I don't know how close this is to World War II, because if you look at the trailer, it's surprisingly over the top. You have like you have soldiers with face paint and prosthetic hands. You have over the top you have combat which is bombastic and over the top. And to me, that's really weird, because the first time the trailer was revealed, prior to that, was 20 minutes of the developers talking about how the game is quote-unquote immersive and how it's trying to be a representation of what war is. And then, you know, you have a guy with a cricket bat trying to slaughter another guy halfway across a battlefield. Yeah, sure, totally immersive, man.
Yeah. So, and I'm also not very comfortable with them using that, you know, V sign because of the Winston Churchill reference.
Yeah.
Because, okay, while he was on the winning side and history always favors the winners, it is a well-documented fact that, you know, Winston Churchill was very bad for India, may have been directly responsible for the Bengal famine that killed like millions of people. So
exactly.
Not exactly comfortable
and
with
also,
the whole
like,
imagery.
Yeah. yeah. using Winston Churchill's references and all that and not having the Iron Maiden song Aces Eye, pretty disappointing. But yeah.
Yeah, all yeah. of zero people got that. But okay.
Anyway,
cool.
So from what we are hearing yeah. in this game, like the microtransaction system sort of also rewards players for playing the game for longer.
Yeah, so it's really, so here's what gets interesting. What DICE, the game's developers based in Sweden, what they've been saying is that anything you earn that makes your character more powerful is what you earn as you keep playing. So whether it's the case of getting, you know, really cool weapon unlocks or getting access to really cool classes or gear, it only happens as you continue playing. So it doesn't. And the reason why they stressed on this is because with Star Wars Battlefront 2, if you have the misfortune of playing against someone who, I don't know, maybe spent $100 in in-game currency, you pretty much got smoked. So here they're trying to ensure that there's a level playing field, and the only advantages you get because you're playing. Now, I don't know how good an idea this is, simply because it could also result in a situation where the game is just, it becomes unbalanced, but it becomes unbalanced slower. You're just like trying to fend off the inevitable. When a smarter move would have been to make sure everyone's on equal footing through and through, and just and don't give anyone any upside. Let everyone be at the same playing field. Reward them in cosmetics, reward them in levels, reward them in cool stuff that doesn't impact gameplay.
It's been interesting seeing how some developers approach the same thing you're talking about. Like Blizzard with Hearthstone is the worst about this. If someone just picks up Hearthstone right now, if they do not spend money, they are almost screwed in ranked and in unranked mode, because everyone who's playing has spent some money, or they probably know how to play, and you get matched with even the newer players. Someone or the other is going to spend $50 and get that beginner's pack, and you get quite a bit by playing more. Like you earn free packs, you open them, if you get legendaries, if you get good cards and all, you can make better decks. When you start out, you're pretty screwed in the beginning. And you look at how Nintendo's approached this with ARMS. So ARMS has no microtransactions, and you can keep earning in-game currency and then unlock more ARMS for your character. And if you get the same one, it gives you a 10% boost. That's all. That's the only upgrade in terms of, you know, gameplay affecting thing which they do. So instead of doing 100 with a punch, you do 110. That's all. So while they are doing something like that, which rewards people who play more, it's not that big a difference. I feel like over here, it's going to be a bigger difference when they implement it. Because going by at least what happened with Battlefield and with Battlefront 2, basically what I'm trying to say is it's a little too good to be true. The way they're promoting this, which saying no loot boxes, everyone's on the same front and all, when there will be, like, you know, they let you choose your reward properly when you rank up. It's not like a random thing and all. Like, I feel like it's too good to be true at this stage. So I feel like, yeah, it's going to be a problem in the long run. So like in 6 months, if someone picks up the game, or when it hits EA Access, which is going to do in like 6 to 8 months for sure, that's how these things work, that player is going to be at quite a disadvantage compared to the people who've been playing since day one.
And yeah, and again, coming back to Battlefront 2, if you know, this is something we noticed when he started playing the game again. After the removal of loot boxes, after the removal of God knows how many currencies in the game. And yeah, it's you pretty much were in a very bad place. Everyone else who's been playing the game through thick and thin knows the map better, knows the skills better, knows the classes better, knows the weapons better. And you pretty much got outmatched, regardless what you were playing. So there is a chance that this might still happen to Battlefield 5 either way.
What I am worried about is something that we saw in Battlefront 2, which is a lot of people would just like put a rubber band on their controller and keep their character moving, because in that game, there was a component which essentially said that if you spend a certain amount of time in the game, then you earn more currency.
Yes.
I think something similar could happen with Battlefield V or 5 or whatever, in that, you know, people would just like have their characters aimlessly moving around so that, you know, they get a better chance of getting improved loot or something.
That happens with Splatoon 2, where some people AFK because you earn like a very small amount of XP, but you do earn stuff even if you AFK in a game, which is a big problem considering the games are very unbalanced if someone from each team is not playing.
Yeah, Splatoon 2 has that problem.
It's a
4v4
game, and like the games are really short as well, so like if someone drops out or gets disconnected, you basically lost. There's a very small chance you can win. With Overwatch, at least if someone does this, if they AFK, they get kicked out, and there's backfill, which helps a lot. So I wouldn't really worry about that aspect, because I feel like at least this is the kind of thing which you'd see in a lot of free-to-play mobile games, and they seem to be going into the opposite direction on that front. At least they will have some form, like people who think this is going to be like, you know, like the old Battlefields where it's all about the players and all and no microtransactions, no, that's not going to be the case. They're going to add something which will make you feel like spending money for sure eventually. But I don't think it's going to be something like this where they reward you for doing nothing. So.
Yeah, I mean, my suspicion is, and if we go by all the leaks about Battlefield 5, all of which, by the way, have come true, be it the title of the game, be it the fact that it's not going to have any pay-to-win microtransactions, be it the fact that they're not going to be loot boxes, all of it's come true. The only thing that's left on the Battlefield 5 leak bingo card is Battle Royale mode. And while EA obviously haven't said much about it just yet, one of the leaks did say that the game is going to ship with a Battle Royale mode. It's going to have a Battlefield Royale mode. It'll have a Battle Royale mode probably a couple of months after launch. Worst case situation. Now, if that's the case, think about it, right? You be nice by not having, you know, pay-to-win microtransactions, by removing loot boxes, by being quote-unquote transparent. And then when you launch the Battle Royale mode, well, you just basically do the Battlefield equivalent of a battle pass, which is allow people to partake in challenges that allow them to get cool cosmetic items they can't get otherwise. And then you see how that loop works out. I have a feeling we're going to see that going on with this game more than anything else. They will borrow from the Fortnite and PUBG playbook to ensure that people keep coming back. Even PUBG, they have seasonal stuff you can pick up. I'm sure we're going to see something similar where the emphasis is going to be purely on cosmetics to keep people coming back.
Yeah, so what do you think the theme of this game is most likely going to be? I mean, like World War based or futuristic or just random?
For the Battle Royale mode?
No.
I mean,
The reason I'm asking this is that a Battle Royale mode, like, it's basically a free-for-all and, like, yeah. The final person surviving wins, yeah. Right? So that sort of a thing doesn't really work in a war setting, right?
Exactly. It doesn't work in a war setting. Yeah, which is why, I mean, yeah, that's an interesting way of looking at it. It could just be a standalone thing where it's maybe, I don't know if they do something like a near future scenario. Unlikely, because, I mean, Battlefield has stuck to its guns with the World War I, World War II aesthetic for a while now. And in fact, the very first Battlefield game, 1942, was a World War II shooter, was the World War II shooter. So, I mean, way I see it, I think they'll probably stick to the same theme, but how it works out in terms of mechanics, I agree, there is a bit of a clash.
But I think, like, out of all the developers that are trying to do Battle Royale now, DICE is the only ones who are going to be able to pull it off because they've been doing massive scale online games for a long time.
Exactly.
In fact, when they showed off with Battlefield... With Battlefield 1, when they showed off how operations mode and how the online mode works, and even Battlefront 1, like, it was crazy with the... Just, you know, the scale at which this is happening and the visuals and audio design, like, it'll probably end up being the best looking Battle Royale game ever if they do add something like that. And yeah, I have a feeling it'll just be one of their normal, like, the normal themed World War II things only, except there'll be more weapons spawning, more drop spawning.
More cricket bats and prosthetic arms.
Probably. But yeah, it'll just be like a more arcade version of the normal multiplayer with more players. So it'll be like a thing which... because Battlefield has quite an active and serious online community. So this might be like the relaxing arcade mode. Kind of like how Overwatch has the arcade mode again over there. Yeah. Where you have Mystery Heroes, Total Mayhem and stuff like that. You just play those when you want to relax. If you want to be serious, you get into ranked after a few games of quick play. So I think it'll be something like that. And I can definitely see it working. Although 100 player, I don't know how it'll work at that scale. DICE may try and pull it off this time, but I'll tell you one franchise which I do not think can do Battle Royale at all: Call of Duty. After like P2P online and after lag online and all, like, I do not want to imagine it might make Splatoon 2 feel like Overwatch. So yeah,
I don't know. Like, I'm the thing is, what some of you seem to have forgotten is that Battlefield 1942 had 64 player multiplayer. I mean, I don't know, Battle Royale is 100 players, just add another 36. I'm sure they can pull it off. They've done it before.
No, they can. I'm not saying they won't. I'm just saying it's going to be interesting seeing if they make any actual changes, how big the map is and stuff like that.
Yeah.
Because PUBG on console runs like crap. It still runs really badly. They keep adding new stuff. instead of actually fixing the performance. And recently they've said, oh, we're sorry, we're committed to, like, you know,
that's, they said that about the PC version.
Yeah, that's even worse. Yeah. Because, like, you have Microsoft promoting the hell out of the Xbox One version in game preview. It got the new map recently and all. Meanwhile, at launch, the mobile version ran better and it continues to run better, and it got the map as well, Miramar. So yeah, like, I just do not. And meanwhile, Fortnite, I feel like Fortnite makes fun of PUBG in the patch notes, where they literally say, like, don't you remember when they enabled 60 FPS? They just said, we feel no, there's no need for 30 FPS anymore on console. 60 FPS for all. So it's going to be interesting seeing this year play out between Call of Duty and Battlefield again. Last year was, like, Battlefront 2 is not really going up against COD, even though both sold really well. This year it's going to be properly Battlefield versus Call of Duty, which is going to be like Fortnite versus PUBG, according to me.
Which is basically 2016's Battlefield 1 versus Infinite Warfare.
Yes.
But then at the end of it, coming back to your original point, that where you mentioned that you have no hopes for Black Ops for pulling off Battle Royale.
Yes.
Why?
I just don't think they can pull off the scale. Now, out of all their developers who do COD games, Treyarch can do it. They have they said dedicated servers also this time, so there's a possibility. Just the fact that they revealed it by saying that, oh, yes, there is Battle Royale, here's the name, you know what Battle Royale is, and moved on. It feels like it was added last minute.
Oh yeah, which is quite possible, because the other theory that was doing the rounds was, they needed something to make up for the lack of a single-player campaign. Now, while Treyarch would like us to believe that the game was purposely planned without a single-player campaign, there are already rumors afloat that Modern Warfare 4, which will be the next Call of Duty game next year, will have a single-player campaign. So that level of incongruity is usually unheard of. You'd want to make sure you have the same modes regardless of the game. But fact so... I mean, the rumor is that with Black Ops 4, the single player was deemed to be too outlandish, so they didn't go forward. So, I mean, Battle Royale seems to be like a substitute. And like Mike has said, right, what we saw during the Black Ops 4 reveal was basically the name of the mode, Blackout. The fact that's going to have a big map. But that was it. But it'll be fun to see how they actually pull this off if they do a Battle Royale. But then that aside, at least EA also let us know what editions of the game are there. So there's a standard edition and the deluxe edition. The standard edition has found itself in a bit of a controversy because the World War II pedants have dictated that there can't be a woman on the cover, which is hilarious. So there's been a lot of internet outrage
that's
around that.
That's just like complete and total nonsense.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, I don't know what to say. It's ridiculous. But then that aside, we do have pricing. So Mike, take it away.
So multiple editions, multiple platforms, in multiple formats. Let's start with digital, because that's kind of the best way to get this game, because it's one of those games you want installed at all times on console. So there's a deluxe edition and there's a single player. There's a standard edition. The deluxe edition on PSN is $4,499 or $4,500. And the standard edition is $3,375, which is less than what it usually would be. The interesting thing is, as usual, the deluxe edition gets you access to the game earlier, a few days earlier. It also gets you some cosmetics. It gets you weekly items, which is interesting. This is kind of like some games do this. Like even FIFA has some edition which gives you weekly packs or weekly cards.
Weekly players.
Or something.
Yeah, weekly players.
So, and it gives you some special solder sets. I have no idea what that is, but the deluxe edition does get you early access to the open beta, if you care about that. On Xbox, on the other hand, the deluxe edition is $4,800, which is a few hundred more than PS4. But if you have EA access, it's $4,320, because on EA access, you get discounts on every EA game, even the newer ones. The standard edition is also more expensive on Xbox Live than it is on PSN. A little disappointing in that. But Origin is following standard pricing, $3,499 for the standard edition, $4,799 for the deluxe, which matches the Xbox price. If you want to buy these things at retail, so you have the option to sell them and you aren't interested in the digital-only future, it's $3,999 on Xbox and PS4 listed on Amazon India right now. There is no listing for the deluxe edition right now. Kind of makes sense, because the Elite Star Trooper or Elite whatever edition for Battlefront 2 is still available. I don't think anyone bought it. It's not even discounted that much, and I'm pretty sure it didn't do well. And now no one wants to pay for Battlefront 2, let alone a more expensive edition of it. These editions, usually at retail at least, they need to be sold ASAP, otherwise the value is completely gone. So I see why they are not bringing it, because at least looking at how EA games fare on Amazon India and in India in general, it's going to be very cheap very soon, regardless of whether the game is fantastic or whether it's really bad, just going by gray market and going by Amazon India discounts.
Yeah, I mean, that's a very valid point. So actually, if you're the sort who doesn't mind waiting a bit, you could actually end up getting Battlefield 5 cheaper by just waiting for a deal to show up, usually which will happen a month or two after release max. In fact, EA themselves tend to discount their own games by around 30-33% in December. So if you wait, you might just get a better deal. And the second thing to keep in mind is, yes, EA's performance in India has been shambolic at best. We've seen a situation where, I think with FIFA 18, Amazon barely crossed 10,000 units sold on day one, which is shocking considering most FIFA games do an average around 40-50,000 units day one alone. So, yeah, I mean, you can expect the discount if it continues with Amazon. That being said, if you want it day one, Amazon isn't your best place. Your local friendly independent retailer will probably get stock earlier and probably give it you cheaper as well. So, yeah, I mean, there are a ton of options to pick it up and check it out. But we would advise against pre-ordering just yet because we haven't got a proper glimpse of the gameplay. Right now, all we've seen was that one cinematic trailer that had hints of gameplay where you could, you know, shoot while lying down and had a few showed how much you could prone and showed what tanks you could use. But we haven't seen a proper full-fledged gameplay trailer yet. So with that in mind, we'd still advise against pre-ordering till we see more footage, at least.
But yeah, the single-player campaign will probably be really good. It's going to follow the same format as Battlefield 1's war stories. And they're going to have like strong narrative-driven quote-unquote chapters. So it's going to be fun to see that because Battlefield 1 story was really fun to play. So, and yeah, they've said specifically, yeah, this has a single-player campaign, which is kind of like taking jabs at Call of Duty. And both of the games are releasing in October. October 19th for Battlefield.
Yeah, and October 12th for Black Ops 4.
Yeah, and what's a week after Battlefield?
There's this little game I'm sure you may have heard of, made by an independent studio called Rockstar. Like, there's this small indie studio. Yeah. It's called Red Dead Redemption 2.
Yeah,
no one cares about this.
So October is pretty packed, and these three are probably going to be the top three selling games of the year, if not FIFA or maybe Spider-Man and God of War have something to say about that.
Or unless Nintendo release a Pokemon game, which is likely.
Yeah, it is likely. Nintendo, Pokemon, Smash, stuff like that. But there's one thing we can say for sure. If Valkyria Chronicles 4 releases in October in between these games, the franchise will die again. So, yeah.
Okay.
Crickets.
So I think we are ready to talk about the games we've been playing this week. I have finished an EA game called Mass Effect Andromeda. The story in the end turned out to be quite good overall, all things said and done. I enjoyed it. Unfortunately, I think it got, how should I say it? I think the game got EA'd. That's, I think, a new sort of a thing we'll probably use for every game that EA ruins eventually. The development cycle was way too short from what we know, and they sort of didn't polish it as much as they should have before launching it. And after launching, they saw that the sales weren't nearly as good as they expected them to be, and they sort of have abandoned it. So I wish they had like spent a little more time polishing all the kinks out and sort of spending more time in the single player campaign and like fixing all the bugs and everything that was there at launch. Anyway, so the story was good enough. I liked it. I thought there was a lot of potential there, but somehow they just couldn't like create that whole scale that was there in the original trilogy, and they didn't spend enough time with it. They didn't really think it through. So the whole, if you look at it, the whole story of Mass Effect Andromeda is similar to the original series in that there is an ancient dead civilization type of a ruin, and a new species is trying to colonize it. And it's not exactly a humans versus machines thing. But, you know, like, there are so many unexplained things in this. Like, there's this thing called the Scourge, which is, like, sort of plaguing the entire Andromeda galaxy. They really don't know where it came from. There's hardly any exploration of that angle. You get to know more about the Jardan, which is the name of the, like, remnant species and all. That was good. But there's not enough information about the new Angaran or whatever civilization that's there. And definitely not enough alien species, and none of them have been, like, really developed much. And I also am sort of like tired of this whole thing in Mass Effect Andromeda where you get to play only as the human players. Like, I seriously think you should be able to play as other civilizations as well in the single player campaign. And like, you know, there should be more exploration of the story. But from like for all intents and purposes, the series has been abandoned. So don't waste your time playing this game. Like it's, you know, if the, like in the end of the at the end of the game, there's like a scene which says that okay, there is more to the story, sort of an ending. But I don't think it's ever going to come to fruition now that EA and BioWare are focusing on that Anthem, which is a new IP for them. So yeah, overall pretty disappointed because, you know, they didn't polish it enough.
Yeah, but then it's funny you bring up Anthem because it'll be, I won't be surprised to see if the reaction to Battlefield 5 and what they're doing in terms of the big risks actually has an impact on what Anthem has when that finally is out.
Yes, I think, well, I'm going to stick by my statement which I made in the previous episode of this podcast, which is don't touch any EA game unless, you know, you have to review it. So, yeah, I think I'm going to stick by that for now because of the disappointment that was this Mass Effect Andromeda, then Burnout Paradise Remastered and Need for Speed. What was it? Payback. Yeah, that was also really bad.
It's your own fault for not buying DICE games.
Oh, yeah. Mirror's Edge Catalyst wants to have a word with you.
That was good. No. That was better than Need for Speed Payback for sure.
Debatable.
And it was better than Mass Effect Andromeda
debatable.
Also.
Debatable. Very debatable. Highly debatable. Let's not go into
anyway.
Mirror's
so,
Edge Catalyst is my Andromeda.
I also played this game called The Crew, since The Crew 2 is...
Why are you playing bad games, Pranay? Like... With listen, time so limited in so, the universe.
Me and Rishi had a conversation with before the podcast where I was telling him that The Crew reminds me a lot of Forza Horizon 3. Doesn't have the same polish, may not be as good as that, but it comes quite close. And Rishi told me, you know, when we reviewed it originally, it was a complete and colossal train wreck. But Ubisoft spent a year or two patching that game slowly and then they brought it up to a really good level. So, I'm not looking forward to Crew 2 right now. I think I'll just play Crew 1 instead.
Yeah, I mean, I don't blame you. It's really weird, right? Why even release games in such a sorry state? But then again, I mean, we saw it with For Honor. We saw it with Rainbow Six Siege. And we've seen it with a bunch of their other titles.
If you like are going to like go across studios, there's a game called No Man's Sky, which
there we go. Yeah,
also
exactly.
Saw something
yeah,
similar.
Yeah, but then like I'd say Rainbow Six Siege and No Man's Sky have had the best turnarounds out of the things, because For Honor, no one really plays or cares about anymore. Rainbow Six Siege is insane. The turnaround, Everyone loves it now. People are more than willing to keep investing in the season passes or gold passes or whatever they call it.
That's because they're very smartly. Fixed the entry barrier. Before it used to be a $60 purchase. Now that they have that starter kit, which is what I think 500 rupees on Steam. Yeah, I mean it's a good price point to jump
and
in.
I mean, yeah, people should play this over CSGO on Steam at least. So
I kind of disagree with you there, but okay.
Yeah.
Anyway, so you guys want to talk about the games you've
so,
been playing?
Yeah, been playing two games. One of them, Street Fighter 30th Anniversary Collection on Switch. And it's really good. It collects 12 Street Fighter games, the original Street Fighter, multiple versions of Street Fighter 2, 3 versions of Street Fighter Alpha, and Street Fighter 3. And it's really, really good. Each game has arcade perfect gameplay to replicate exactly how it was in the arcade. You have lots of emulation options. You can like play with scan lines, you can play with the aspect ratio, stuff like that. But most interesting of all, the online mode for 4 games included works really well, both locally and online, like, you know, actually away from the other person. Tested it both locally and online, worked really well, netcode held up, game was a lot of fun. Basically enjoying it a lot. And they have this museum section which has soundtracks for every game included in this, and a lot of concept art and some comments for the making of some games. Now, the Street Fighter 2 part has like comments for everything when they like talking about what they did. But for some reason, they've left out this aspect for the Street Fighter Alpha and Alpha 2 and the Street Fighter 3 portions of this.
Yeah.
Which is a little disappointing considering it kind of feels like they phoned these two bits in. But rest of it is really good. And the interactive timeline for the whole franchise from 1987 till now is really, really nice. And it is funny seeing like 2016 where they said Street Fighter 5 launches as a new entry and nope, it's not on Switch and we're looking at this on the Switch. So
yeah, and what's interesting is that while I do agree, yes, they have... Because I've been playing it as well, that they did miss out on giving explanations on how they went about developing the Alpha and Street Fighter 3 games. Well, it also has some really interesting nuggets of information, that such as Zangief's name during development being Vodka Golovsky, which I'm like, yeah, that's perfectly fine. Go ahead. Or that Dalsim was originally called Great Tiger. So, yeah.
Oh, and one more interesting thing is there's also a character gallery. Now, why'd I assume they just do... Here's the sprite for the character and this is how it looked in each game. They actually let you play frame by frame all the special moves and the animations are fantastic. Like, you actually see how much work goes into something like Chun-Li's flying bird kick, which is beyond impossible to do on the Switch, but somehow Rishi managed doing it, I think, by button mashing.
I take offense to that. I have skills.
Because that D-pad is... it's the anti-fighting game D-pad, so...
Can I say I have skills?
So, yeah, like, it's a really nice collection.
Even in the Pro Controller?
The Pro Controller is fine because that has a serviceable D-pad.
Wait, it's so not you as did it on the Joy-Con?
Yeah, and it actually works fine. I don't understand the hate for the Joy-Con on this game. It's actually pretty good.
This collection as a whole is a lot better than the Mega Man collection set, which feels like half of it was good and the other half was lazy. So, yeah, this is really good. It releases today as of this podcast recording and for some reason it's 1,000 rupees more on Switch. So
yeah, which is like ridiculous. So you're paying 2,499 on Xbox or PS4 or PC, but Switch you're paying 3,499. And also what's interesting is the netcode is actually very nice. Mike and I played it online. We played tethered via hotspot. It ran brilliantly.
Maybe that's why they're charging 1,000 extra because Splatoon 2 netcode is crap.
No, it's the same thing because it's P2P in the end, and with a fighting game, if one person starts lagging, you both suffer.
Yeah, so it was pretty good. It actually runs quite well, and even I played a few rounds myself online at home with a 50 Mbps line. It works out just well too. So it's in a good place, worth checking out, though not at full price. I don't feel at full price because why should we be paying 1,000 rupees more, at least on Switch?
And if you don't want to pay 1,000 rupees more on Switch and you want to buy it digitally, you can buy it from the US eShop where it's the same price as other platforms for some reason. But yeah, other than Street Fighter, I've been playing Dark Souls Remastered on PC, PS4 and Xbox One. It's really, really good. Online works really well. In fact, I've been playing it pre-release and post-release on Xbox One. At least I tried it last night and there are bloodstains all over the place. Online is active. Everyone's like helping out. It feels good. Sad thing is, if you want to buy it on PC, while it is very cheap, it's only 600 rupees for getting the upgrade to the new version from Dark Souls. Prepare to buy a bad port edition and prepare to use a mod which barely fixes some issues edition.
Also known as Dark Souls Prepare to Die edition.
Yes, for those on Steam, which is now not available for purchase anymore. Online is full of hackers. They've not done anything to fix that aspect. There are people who are just coming into your game, dropping like souls for you and getting you soft banned and put into the other matchmaking pool, which is with other soft banned people and hackers. Not a good thing because a lot of people wanted to like get a version which they could play online without hackers. Seems like as of now, that's the only thing the only way to do that is if you get it on console. The price on console is at least now is 2,499 on PS4 and Xbox. But as of this recording, stock isn't available in India yet. It's supposed to show up on 31st, going by gamestheshop.com. I still haven't got my Xbox One pre-ordered copy, so we'll keep you updated when that happens. But at 2,499, well worth it. It's like about 100 times better than playing the Xbox 360 version on Xbox One, which I did play for a few hours just to be prepared for the remastered edition. And basically that.
Rishi?
Aside from playing Street Fighter and Dark Souls, and I pretty much endorse whatever Mike's had to say regarding Dark Souls, it's pretty good on consoles. And in fact, that is the way to play unless you prefer playing offline on PC. Okay, so I've also been playing this fighting game called BlazBlue Cross Tag Battle on the Switch. It's basically a game that takes place that has characters from the BlazBlue universe, characters from the Ruby universe, characters from Persona, and I think another franchise called Undernight. Right?
Undernight in birth EXE late est, where there are brackets on the ST.
Yeah. So it's basically...
Stay tuned to the show notes for the actual syntax and spelling of the game name.
Yeah, we apologize to anyone before that. But yeah, it's actually a lot of fun. It's crazy. It's over the top. The story mode is a lot of fun too. It's just super enjoyable. It looks like to be one fighting game that people should look out for. It's made by Arc System Works, the same guys behind Dragon Ball FighterZ, and it seems that they actually got the good people to work on this one. It's really, really looking really, really good. We should have a full review out on June 5.
Okay, then. I think that's all we have for this episode of Transition, and we will see you with another episode next week. As always, if you have any questions, comments, or feedback, do write to us at podcast@gadgets360.com. The music for this episode comes via Magnus Solai Paulson, whose album PPP PPP is where the tracks are from. And once again, if you have the Google app on your Android phone, then go there, search for Transition Podcast, Gadgets 360, and subscribe to us. And if you have Apple Podcasts on your iOS device or iTunes on your Mac, then just go there, search for Transition and subscribe to our podcast. Your subscriptions help us a lot. Thank you so much for listening.